Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Educating Josh, in which I, Luke Cutforth, and two very special guests, Zara Barry, the comedian, and Benjamin Cook, the washed-up journalist and broadcaster.
I'm a very special guest.
Bring together three of the most divisive stories of the week. Our wonderful Josh Winslade will have 20 seconds to respond with his gut feeling on the story with absolutely no research, after which we will have an attempt at Educating Josh. Zara and Ben, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
This is the first time. Is this the first time we've had two guests before? Has that happened before?
No, I think we had Hannah and Leah before, yes. Which was a good show. So you've got those guys to be.
Is this the quickest anyone's ever come back? I was only on like 3 weeks ago, wasn't it?
It is. It's also, I think, the quickest anyone's become a washed-up journalist. Oh. 3 weeks ago, you were a journalist and broadcaster.
I'm broadcaster, now I'm washed up.
Yes,
yeah, well, the weeks have taken their toll.
You do? You have them once and you say nice things, and then the second time they come back...
Yes, watch out,
what are you
going to
say about me if
washed
I come
washed-up comedian.
It's because I've just been waiting in this studio the last 3 weeks. I've made a little life for myself under the producer's desk.
Okay, well, let's move on with the show, please. So last week, James's question was the first question, and Zara, could you please tell us how it performed in the polls?
Yes, well, so James's question was, should we ban shows for targeting sensitive topics at teenagers? And 9% said yes, 84% said no, and 7% other.
Other, the mysterious other. Well, that was that was very decisive.
No comment.
Absolutely. Do you guys have any opinions on that, or are you going to hide?
I think that teenagers should be exposed to everything because they're going through a very hard time. They're exposing themselves to it. They should see it in the media, and it'll make them feel better about their own lives if they see other people going through mental illness or, you know, cutting themselves or suicide or whatever. You know, I think that it's important for them to be exposed to that so they know, like, there's no point... like mollycoddling them and saying everything's wonderful.
Don't want a nanny state. I think me and Zara are going to get on.
Yeah,
though.
I was going to say that was Josh's opinion. So I'm very scared. Everyone's going to turn on me.
And also, Adventure Boy on Twitter, and that's boy spelled B-O-I, says, I think it's important for teenagers to be aware of sensitive issues such as suicide and don't think that banning things like that would do any good. So, yeah, he agrees with me.
All right. Well, Noah's question was second. Ben, could you please tell us how that performed in the polls?
Yes. What do you want from me? What do you want from me? I'm doing what you wanted. Noah's question was, is bringing genetics into trans identity a good idea? 71% said yes, 27%...
Yes! Yes! Yes!
27% said no, and 2% other.
Anyone have any opinions on that?
Well, I had to clarify what this meant. They say that there's a gene for...
transness.
Or if there was, or is it theoretical?
They're trying to find it. They think they found it.
Because there was talk about that there's a gay gene. They talk about that, and they said that what they were unsure about that. So.
Yeah, so it's basically that there's been an outcry online saying it shouldn't matter, which is true, but also it should matter from my point of view, just in the idea of knowledge.
Yeah,
research and knowing. Like, it's a good point.
Freya on Twitter said, I personally think we should take into account mental health more than genetics, as this could cause a lot more damage if people with the gene can get faster treatment.
That's a really good comment. Yeah.
Wow. Well, last week, my question was, should Article 13 pass into law? A very contentious subject on the podcast. And the results were 21% yes, 69% no, and 10% other. Josh, how do you feel?
I feel like we have an audience that likes YouTube. I think I was always fighting a losing battle on that one.
Well, an incredibly damning response from Ishan on Twitter, which said, checking if everything uploaded is copyrighted or not will cost way too much and no company can afford that. Josh is more wrong here than he has ever been.
I mean, that's not
true. So why uphold any law then? If it
exactly.
costs too much? Fuck it. Anarchy in the UK.
Fundamentally, I. Okay. Cheers.
Did we copyright that?
Also, don't you listen to them, Josh.
You just took his words and repeated them.
We did.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's time to move on to the first story of the week, and that is my story. Josh, my story comes from The Independent, and it is that Alexandra Palace defends security after Bring Me the Horizon fan dies at London concert. Here are the three things you need to know. Emergency services were unable to save the man, and is currently unclear what the cause of his death was, but the venue has denied that the death was because of its security measures. Following the news, some attendees began to accuse the venue of having lax security measures, with one claiming he'd seen, quote, more security at McDonald's. Initial rumours on social media indicated there were just 10 security personnel present at the 10,000 capacity venue. However, Alexandra Palace has responded, writing, "We feel we must address inaccurate information. There were over 150 security personnel on site for the concert. The tragedy has brought to light the wider issue of security at gigs and its importance. My question for you is, should venues be held legally responsible for deaths caused by events on their property?" 20 seconds, Josh. Go.
I think there's a chain of responsibility here. There's the insurance that's needed, and I feel like the promoter initially is the person that's responsible for deaths. You can hire a venue out. If you've hired a venue, you're then responsible for what happens there.
20 seconds is up. How do we feel about that? Now, I must admit, I'm not a particularly big gig goer. I've been to a few gigs. Ben, you're a big gig. You've been to gigs.
Well, yeah, look, I mean, it's... when stuff like this happens, I suppose you need to make a judgment call about whether is it a freak accident, or is it something which is indicative of a larger problem that just hasn't thus far been addressed. In this instance, I think it's probably the latter. I've been at gigs where there've been mosh pits, and I've been in mosh pits, and it's a lot of fun. It's also quite hard to justify from a safety point of view. You know, they've banned at a lot of gigs at a lot of big festivals, crowd surfing. It still goes on, and I imagine if they banned mosh pits, they'd still happen. But it helps, you know, minimize the risk, make people aware of the risk.
Yeah, I don't see how having more security would have fixed this.
Yeah.
I don't, you have, you know, 100 very big people...
They aren't going to be in the crowd.
They're not in the crowd. I guess maybe you can have... I'm trying to think how this could have been presented to then see what, like, reverse engineer the problem. So,
I mean, often what happens is it's the responsibility of the band on stage. I mean,
How can they control it?
Well, I've been at... They have the mic, essentially. Mm. So I've been at gigs where the band has said, okay, we're not going to... No, I don't mean just morally. I mean, practically, I've been at gigs where the band has stopped and said, okay, we're not going to play until everyone takes a step back.
Right.
And a further step.
So when it happens at all, or when they deem it's gone too far?
Well, I suppose if it's made illegal, or if venues start having clear rules against stuff like moshing, then, you know, a band will take that on board. I mean, increasingly bands are stopping gigs to call out instances of sexual abuse. When they see a guy, you know... behaving towards a woman in a way that would be inappropriate, there are bands who will just stop.
That's
call
brilliant.
A guy out, get them to
how
leave.
How can they see? Like, it depends how big the audience is. There's only so much you can see on stage.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's quite dark. It's Bring Me the Horizon. They like a dark set. So I think maybe night vision and heat cameras is the only thing I can think where you'd be able to detect a body on the floor. But even then, you've got people crammed into such a tight space.
But I think when you see a mosh pit, I mean, a mosh pit is big enough and visible enough to call people out on it in the same way that people crowd surfing is.
It's interesting that you guys have gone straight to mosh pits, because my original question that I had for this story, which I changed because I thought it would be an absolute no, was should we ban moshing? What do you think? Do you think that would have been an absolute
what
no?
Was the,
I see what you mean.
What was the age limit on the event? Jack, do we know? Producer Jack.
I imagine it was
14
plus.
14 plus.
Yeah.
In that situation, then absolutely, you can't have a 30-year-old man.
I think, I don't want to sound like a party pooper, but I do think moshing is really, really dangerous. And I it's fun when it goes well, but when does it, like, when you've got crowds like that, it's like a football crowd. It's just asking for trouble.
It takes one person to fall down. The difference with the pits is often people are running in circles, you know, that's what creates the mosh
Yeah. If you like, and rather than just jumping up and down. And so if someone trips over, they're often, it's like a domino effect, and someone at the bottom will get crushed.
Mid-centre barriers are fantastic. They work really, really, really well. So I think a venue...
Could you explain a little bit what that is? Is that a...
They break the crowd up. So basically what it allows you to have is, you know how you have the press pit at the front for photographers and people get lifted out into it?
Yeah.
About, say, 30 feet back from the stage, they have another one there.
What, for mosh pits?
Not specifically for mosh pits, but it's another area where people can get lifted
into. Does that stop moshing? I mean,
it does. It's
for
very
accessibility
effective.
If you need to.
Well, because you're
going to
run into a metal grate, essentially.
Yeah, so the surge forward, it stops people being crushed at the front. And it also means that the mosh pit is not only accessible from the front. You have like the shape of a C kind of access to it, which allows you to get to at least three sides of it, I suppose.
I was
going to
say, why was there a thing saying there wasn't enough security guards, and then Alexandra Palace said, oh no, there was.
So that was just,
what
that
was
just,
bad
just
press?
Hearsay.
That was hearsay.
Right.
I mean, essentially, at gigs like this, you have a lot of security in lots of different places, and the ones that you see are the ones at the front, which when someone crowd surfs, they pull the person off the crowd and let them run back round the back.
Yeah.
And that's the ones you see. There's an awful lot of security, you know,
and when
behind
you enter
stage.
The
like at
well.
The Yes, exactly. Yeah. Behind
and
stage at the entrance.
It's so easy for one tweet from one person saying more security at McDonald's to kind of get picked up and give people a cause to get behind. But also saying there was 150 security personnel on site is also misleading. Mm. How many were at the barriers? How many were 30 yards away?
I presume on site means at the venue. I mean, they're not going to all be in
but
there.
But Alexander Palace is a massive venue.
You could have on site, you could have 100 people waiting for the end of the concert when it finishes and they're just shepherding. So... I think that statement's misleading as well.
And 150 people, 150 security guards for a 10,000 cap venue is 66 people per one security guard, which is an awful lot of people.
Yeah.
And someone's died. Like, the thing is, you have to remember, is it's sort of the legalities and the mathematics go out of the equation when you put an event on and your event has caused someone's death. And regardless of whether that's somebody's deliberately the security's fault, you could have put more in place, like, for example, what Josh says about mid barriers, right? To prevent death, because surely everyone's interested in preventing death.
Can I widen it out slightly? Because actually, like, I go to music festivals every summer, and at every major music festival, something like Glastonbury or Reading, you will get a couple of deaths during the festival because just statistically that number of people. You've also got people
taking a lot of drugs,
doing drugs which might slightly heighten the chance.
A lot of alcohol.
So, you know, how far should you hold a venue responsible for that sort of thing? You do your best to stop people smuggling in drugs, but some people still will. And if someone, you know...
If you have a venue with that many people, there's going to be fatalities.
You've got to educate people, I guess, the best you can.
How much do you think the venue know it happens, and because it's part of, for example, the ethos of Glastonbury?
Well, it's the ethos of this type of music as well.
You wouldn't want to ban
moshing, because that would essentially put an end to the excitement of going to a gig like Bring the Horizon.
This kind of gig.
Dying might be, you know, is a freak accident. This clearly doesn't happen a lot at gigs, but can I read one of these comments? Relevant to someone says, I was at the gig in Birmingham and people were coming out with bloody noses and visibly broken bones. This is not what music is about. Now, never
it
mind
definitely
death.
Is what that
well,
kind of
Birmingham.
Music
well, even bloody noses and visibly broken bones you know, at a gig where you're going to get 14-15 year olds, but at any gig, I mean, does it have to be what that music is about? And yeah, you're going to go, yeah, it's absolutely.
And
what
the thing
music
is, you
is.
Can't
yeah,
you yeah. can't expect
really?
Like, the people who are going to those gigs to what Josh said there was, to a certain extent, that is what that music's about. People love putting themselves in danger in the adrenaline rush, and so it's the responsibility of to take that decision away from these people who enjoy adrenaline and to go, I own the venue, actually it's my rules.
And maybe this is the oldest I'm ever going to sound, but if there's nothing more to the music than going to a gig to beat up the people you're with, maybe they're not the best band to support. I don't know. I feel so old now.
Like at Ali Pali, have they not had mosh pits before? And has there not been
probably at almost every gig? And
it's just
no one's died,
but they've got hurt.
Yeah.
Or
people getting hurt all the time. Mm. But this is statistically, obviously, incredibly unlikely. Yeah.
All right. Well, Josh, at the start of this story, you had this to say.
I think there's a chain of responsibility here. There's the insurance that's needed, and I feel like the promoter initially is the person that's responsible for deaths. You can hire a venue out. If you've hired a venue, you're then responsible for what happens there. don't agree with that at all.
You sounded quite distracted during that,
yeah,
Josh.
Yeah, sounded quite... I went to insurance. You can tell I'm a producer. I just went, was I insured? Straight away, it's like, as long as I'm insured, it's fine.
They need to implement something, though, don't they?
Yeah.
So just ban moshing,
just admitting that they need to make changes would be a suitable...
All right, well, finish this story by saying, obviously, this is a horrible thing that's happened. Our thoughts and love go out to Ali Mills' family and friends and et cetera. And I think you've all handled this story incredibly well. You can let us know what you think over on Twitter and our polls at Educating Josh. It is time for the second story of the week, and that is Ben's story.
Let's hope this is a nice cheery one. Snow leopard shot dead at Dudley Zoo after escaping area.
That's definitely...
Okay. The three things you need to know, Josh. First of all, a snow leopard was shot dead after a zookeeper left the enclosure door open and it escaped. Dudley Zoo said 8-year-old Magash was killed after getting free on the 23rd of October when the zoo had closed and all visitors had left. Secondly, the zoo said its animal escape procedure was put in place and the firearms team managed the incident. The zoo said the leopard was killed by a senior member of the firearms team with a single shot and did not suffer, adding that staff had no other option and the decision was taken in the interest of public safety. And thirdly, the incident has sparked arguments between pro- and anti-zoo activists. A spokesman from the Born Free Foundation said, "While this is a sad incident that is undoubtedly very distressing to those who cared for Magash, it brings into sharp focus, once again, that zoos simply cannot guarantee the safety of people and their animals." So my question to you, Josh, is it time to close zoos?
20 seconds, Josh. Go.
I think zoos are great. I absolutely love zoos that operate in the correct way. I think they are responsible for saving some fantastic species that we would otherwise would have lost. But I think some do behave irresponsibly.
Okay. Opinions, anyone?
I think this is the most depressing episode of Educating Josh. Yes. Ever.
Yes. I think I agree with that opinion.
Bloody hell.
Wow,
keep
we did it.
Light,
we educated
guys.
Josh. He agrees with us.
I've got nothing to compare
now,
it to.
I massively disagree with you with the idea that I think zoos are doing a service to society and keeping some things alive.
Yeah, so do
I think that is maybe a byproduct of it, but essentially they exist as a way to bring people in to see fantastic things and make a lot of money of that off that. And one thing I have to back that opinion up is that zoo director David Hancock, this is not from this zoo but from another zoo, said there is a commonly held misconception that zoos are not only saving wild animals from extinction but also reintroducing them to wild habitats. The confusion stems from many sources, all of them zoo-based. In reality, most zoos have no contact of any kind with reintroduction programs.
Hang on, he's a zoo director?
Yes.
I thought he's supposed to be pro-zoos.
Well,
what's he doing? You're shooting yourself in the foot, David.
That's the kind of people we need.
We need them to run zoos, yes.
Exactly.
These are the
David,
surprising
lie.
People. I don't understand what you think is condemning about David Hancock's statement.
I'm not saying condemning, I just mean that there is a common... I definitely thought this until recently, until researching this story, is that there's an idea that zoos are doing a service to the world and saving all the baby animals and making them mate and reintroducing them to the wild. That's not what zoos do.
I mean,
people think they do.
I've thought that. I've never thought they were reintroduced.
Right. But you think they're conservation.
They're wildlife conservation. That's a very different thing.
To be fair, I'd kind of thought that too.
Never thought that,
I think
I guess.
It's a secondary thing. They bring animals out of their environment. I mean, this snow leopard is from Asia, you know, it's taking it into an environment in the UK so that we can stare at it, you know. Like, I think obviously we've got implementations in place to, you know, create this environment that's as good for the creature as possible, but it's never going to be as good as its actual natural habitat.
Yeah, it's
bloody snow leopards coming over here, infiltrating our zoos, getting shot in the face.
I think it's definitely a bit of I don't know. I think I'd need more stats to back this up.
You're better off using the money to go out into their natural environment and set up safari parks.
Well, I mean, that's not necessarily fair because there wouldn't be the money.
But you're talking about the easiest way to have an effect. It's actually illegal in the UK to take any animal from the wild and put it in the zoo without reason. So they are rescue animals that otherwise would have died. They do help with saving some species that... to be perfectly blunt, these species are dying out because you want a nice warm house. But I do agree zoos should be, you know, there are some zoos that should be shut down.
I live quite near a zoo. I live about 5 minutes from London Zoo, and I've been a couple of times, and I don't love zoos, but what always upsets me is like the big cats. I think we should draw a distinction between like the penguins and the meerkats and all that seem happy enough, but you see those big cats and they are just pacing up and down. They're clearly in distress. That's what I feel very uncomfortable about. Not zoos, just full stop.
Yeah. I think there should be more safari parks rather than zoos because
I love a safari park.
The big cats are like out in the open, and they've got more room to roam, literally roam
and
free.
Zoos are in like Zara,
glorified cages.
When I was doing
some
research,
going to tell us why safari parks are better.
Well, I was reading an article and it did say specifically
don't
this.
Longly.
Do you think safari parks are better than traditional zoos? Woburn Safari Park was keeping lions locked up in small enclosures for 18 hours a day.
But small enclosures, but then that's not technically a safari park because the nature of the safari park is that it's just a big park and you drive through.
Maybe they do lock them up.
They've obviously got a section where it's more of a zoo there.
They wouldn't do that at Longley. I love Longley. Yeah, Longley. Too. It's got a maze and it had a Doctor Who exhibition for years.
But we broke down in Longley in the lion enclosure and my dad got out of the car and tried to fix
shoot
the car
a snow leopard in the face.
And one of the wardens came and told him off.
Yeah, I think people are always...
For his own safety.
People are always going to be bad. Like the zoo that you just mentioned, the safari park, is going to do things that they aren't meant to, but the fundamental
idea... You
should
regulate against that, then.
It is. But people are nasty.
Well, then it should be enforced. I mean,
and
like,
then enforce it.
It's like an old people's home. They're there to care for old people, but there's always going to be corruption.
And one old person who shot in the face.
But I don't think that it's time for the end of zoos. I
think all animals are better off in their natural environment. I'm not saying zoologists aren't compassionate,
but they're
giving the best care that they can give.
Penguins aren't always.
But this is what's confusing me, because they're not just being taken, they're taking an animal that would otherwise die.
Why would it die?
Because they're rescued animals. So to start from fresh, you take a lion that's
otherwise going to die. They're bred in captivity.
The ones that are taken from the wild,
right.
The originals are taken as a rescue animal. They're taken
definitely not. Original animals in zoos, i.e. hundreds of years or 100 years ago when zoos started up.
Now. Well,
right.
I'm talking about today.
Well,
any animal that comes from the wild today, legally, is a rescued animal or is one that is brought into a zoo because it cannot be in the wild still.
Define rescued, though. Is that just an umbrella term to make us feel like they've been essentially rescued?
Rescued from what?
They're
know.
In their environment. Yeah.
They're
living their best life.
Yeah, yeah.
No, they're not, because we're affecting their environments. We're tearing down forests. We're destroying their habitats.
We're not.
People don't. The owners of zoos don't set up zoos.
You're buying the products that are
very much so. Yes.
Yes. You're buying the products that are.
That's another topic altogether.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. But still, that the from the environments and the habitats that we're destroying. So, I mean, I have read cases where animals that have been saved from the wild, brought into a zoo, and then have been tried to be rehabilitated, have either died or just they lose that instinct to go out and do what they need to do. So I don't really agree. I don't think you can be okay with dogs but not okay with lions. You're putting a value on an animal because it's bigger.
But I think the one thing
is putting a value on animals that are bigger.
I am. I think the one thing we can all agree on is that Longleat is a cracking day out.
My dad will testify.
All right, well, Josh, at the
not
start
sponsored by Longleat.
At the start of this show, you had this to say.
I think zoos are great. I absolutely love zoos that operate in the correct way. I think they are responsible for saving some fantastic species that we would otherwise have lost. But I think some do behave irresponsibly. I mean, I think I pretty much covered everything that I said quite quickly in that initial response. If you're not okay with a lion being held in captivity, then you definitely shouldn't have a pet at home, regardless of just going, oh well, it's all been bred out of them now and it's fine.
Difference in size and therefore
the only difference being the size.
I'm not just being facetious. I think it makes a difference.
I think
you wouldn't keep a snow leopard at home. You would, but like most of us wouldn't keep a snow leopard at home.
But also, dogs have been man's best friends for literally hundreds of years. A lion isn't a man's best friend. A lion is just like David Attenborough's best friend. But
well, the difference is it'd be very hard to domesticate a lion.
Yeah.
You'd be a lot more put off, I suppose.
Well, I think you should give it a go, Josh.
All right, well, you can let us know what you think over on Twitter and our polls at Educating Josh. It is time for the last story of the week. That's Zara's story.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
So, yeah, my story comes from The Telegraph.
I really hope this is a cheery one. Like, please give us a happy one.
I wouldn't
one.
Say it's cheery. It's quite lighthearted.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Dog and a skateboard. Dog and a skateboard.
Almost. It's a mother defends turning her one-year-old son into an Instagram influencer.
Oh.
Yeah. So, Josh, here are the three things you need to know. Stacey from Essex turns her one-year-old son into a social media influencer, another word for a social media personality. We know that.
Wait, a mansplain.
All right, guys. I didn't know. When I was preparing the next version of the notes, I was like, maybe people won't know what an influencer is.
Because there's a big difference between social media influencer
to this podcast,
and social media
write your own notes
personality.
I don't have any.
Has faced backlash for using the toddler as a tool. The boy, Ralphie, has 15,000 followers.
That's embarrassing. He's got more than me.
I know. Pictures of the baby can earn the family hundreds of pounds in sponsorships, and the family has accumulated £10,000 worth of freebies, including clothes, bedroom furniture, and days out using the account. Stacey has even banned other family members from sharing photographs of Ralphie on social media in case they interfere with his brand.
Wow. Ralphie has a brand.
A brand, yeah. He's a product. Many have questioned Stacey's motives and parenting ability and argue that it's unfair to promote her child in this way. However, with 7-year-old YouTuber Ryan Toys Review being this year's highest paid YouTube star, earning $22 million in the 12 months leading up to June, there's clearly money to be made. My question to you, Josh, is should there be a minimum age for influencers?
20 seconds, Josh. Go.
My knee-jerk reaction is that I hate this story. Not in that it's a bad story to choose, but I kind of think that's a bit disgusting. But then I start thinking about it, and I mean, if there was a minimum age, they're currently operating under parental guidance, so I'm kind of confused.
All right, well, does anyone have any strong opinions on this story?
Yeah, I hate it. I think it's absolutely disgusting, and this child's going to grow up very unhealthy.
Yeah.
Mentally, because I...
And very rich.
That's the other thing.
Rich
and very unhealthy.
The plight of a child star.
I think in the film world, it's kind of developed a bit. You used to have... There's a few that come to mind that I don't want to mention.
Macaulay Culkin?
Well, actually, no.
Oh, he's doing all right.
He is now.
Yeah, he's in that pizza band, isn't he?
Yeah, and he has like a...
has a fantastic podcast.
He has a web series.
Called Bunny Ears. Bunny Ears? Yeah, I don't know. Like, look at Millie Bobby Brown. She's 14 and she has the head of like a 50-year-old. She's fantastic.
It feels like she's legitimately got some sort of talent, though. I feel like this story, this woman is living vicariously through her son. It's just a mirror of her own narcissism.
All parents do that, though, don't they?
Well, yeah, but this is not... The ones that haven't achieved anything themselves do. She's saying she's earning money for him, but that's just an excuse. That's just a guise. What she's loving is... You know,
the attention.
And she's like one of those dance mums.
I suppose it's like, she obviously, like, I've experienced from my mum, me being on YouTube, one of the things my mum, I think, loves about that is she loves the idea that lots of people in the world like me as much as she likes me. Aww. And I think that's really nice. And I think that feels nice as a mum, that you sort of validated, my son is great.
That's
my
your choice,
great.
Though. You're putting yourself you're an adult. On YouTube. Yes.
And so when she says in this that she's trying to earn money for her son, my sort of solution to this is, I don't think there should be a minimum age for influencers. And when I was researching this, it was very difficult because this is just basically an opinion piece. There's no stats to this, right? Mm. And you see the bad side of child stars, and you also see plenty of child stars who are fine.
That are good, yeah.
And so what I think here is that the solution to this would be for some kind of, it doesn't necessarily have to be legislation, it can just be like a kind of norm in the industry, that if you're earning money for your kid, then you need to put a big chunk of that away in a locked account that you can't access. Mm-hmm. You can maybe take 20% as an agent, like an agency fee, mm-hmm. and you can treat your kid to nice stuff, but essentially that money is that kid's. They're not old enough to
but
deal with it right now.
How do you force parents to do that?
Well, that's what I mean, is legislation or some kind of norm.
Also, what they're earning is not actual money, they're earning products that are worth money.
Oh,
so
and
that's,
money, probably.
Well, they're earning £10,000, which is plenty as well.
I think
worth the freebies.
Oh, sorry. But yeah. They're earning hundreds of pounds per post.
Be transparent about it. Call the kid Spawn.
Ad.
Or ad, short for Adam, yeah. Or advertisement.
I think we're assuming a lot here. The mother could be very responsible, teach the kid that not everything comes for free,
except all that stuff that arrived today for free.
if you weren't educated at the same time, then absolutely, but as long as she is responsibly educating him, and people are irresponsible all the time, I don't think there should be a minimum age.
Do you wish your parents had done this, Josh?
I don't know, because what if no, not at all. I would, that's not the kind of thing that I'd want to do, but I mean, what if when my parents were younger, they did, you know, have an account where they showed cute pictures that may accumulated a bunch of money, and I got that when I was 18. Sorry.
Well, that's true, but I think that's true of, say, for example, a child actor expresses, I want to be an actor, and yeah. then their parents sort of enable that dream. And then if the kid grows up and changes...
You've seen beauty pageants and that they're...
Oh, sure, but there is an interest from the child in doing it. Even if it's forced upon them, there's a certain amount of interest. But here...
Mm. I mean, consent.
Maybe there isn't. Yeah.
This is a one-year-old child.
But a kid
maybe there is
a baby. is a dodgy issue in itself.
And it's very much debated when you're able to give consent.
Yeah.
That's why it's
to anything,
legal,
but yeah.
Yeah, that's why there's a
but
legal
also, even if she is responsible, what message is... Like, he's growing up with a screen constantly in his face, teaching him that the only way to get love and validation is through putting photos on Instagram and get
views
what implications is that having on his mental health?
I would debate that the kid probably doesn't necessarily know what's going on.
Maybe that's part of the problem.
I mean,
as an adult,
he's getting snapped at all day.
He's currently one, so currently he doesn't. I don't think he's learning anything.
He's
put into different outfits every couple of hours, and you know. He's
one. I'd missed that bit of the story.
He's 1 year old.
He's one.
One year old.
Oh, for fuck's sake, Stacey. Oh, I've lost patience. He's 1 year old.
There's something gross about that.
And I know there shouldn't be, and it should be the choice of the parent. I'm sure the parent's very loving. There's something that makes me feel a little bit physically sick about that.
Well, that's the internet
monetizing a 1 year old.
The thing is, she thinks it's all positive, but the internet doesn't know positive from negative, and the algorithms actually suggest that negative and depressing stories get more retweets
like
and stuff like
one.
That. So we don't even know if people are actually genuinely liking this kid. They probably just find him like a sort of a freak show
and
kind
growing
of thing.
Up is hard enough without resorting to we all as kids at school might worry about whether we're popular or not. Well, imagine it just being reduced to a series of numbers on a screen.
You've got actual stats as to whether you're
popular.
Yeah,
this is how popular you are. It's gross.
Here's some quantitative
data. I'm angry
data.
About this and the leopard that was shot in the face.
Now, Josh, at the start of this story, you had this to say.
My knee-jerk reaction is that I hate this story. Not in that it's a bad story to choose, but I kind of think that's a bit disgusting. But then I start thinking about it, and I mean, if there was a minimum age, they're currently operating under parental guidance, so I'm kind of confused. Didn't really say much, did I? I think I still agree with that. I do find it gross, but what I was trying to do there was kind of rise above what my morals are and what I do with my children, which isn't that. And I think based on that, there shouldn't be a minimum age, but you should think about what you want for your children and how they want them to grow up.
All right, well, you can let us know what you think over on Twitter in our polls at Educating Josh. It is time for the quickfire round. Josh, a journalist has stated that Ariana Grande's Thank You Next video is surprisingly anti-queer and promotes trans misogyny, heterosexual pride, and blackface. It is getting a lot of hate online. Can you ever become too woke?
Yes, absolutely.
That's what this whole podcast is about, from Josh's point of view. Josh, the RSPCA are promoting how you can make a difference for animals this Christmas by checking any meat, fish, and dairy products you buy are RSPCA assured. Should a charity set up to prevent cruelty to animals be promoting eating meat in the first place?
Why would a piece of meat be anti-dog?
Well, it's like, well, if it was cruel. If it was like cruel, cruel. If it was especially cruel to animals.
Oh, but not specifically the kind of animals the RSPCA.
No, no, no. Just like if it, this no, meat no, 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 was
killed humanely.
They're not selling dogs in Tesco.
No,
that's what confused me.
In the co-op, RSPCA are going, here's a stamp of approval that we think this meat was treated vaguely humanely.
I think that gives the RSPCA too much power.
What?
What?
Yeah, absolutely.
Why don't you want them to have power?
The RSPCA.
Because they're going to close down the zoos.
They could be bought out. There's corruption. I smell
corruption.
They can't
buy out a charity. Can you? Can you buy out a charity?
You can influence the right people.
All right, okay.
I reckon that's got something to do with Philip Green. He'd do that, wouldn't he?
No, of course.
That's just what Philip Green would do.
And I bet he'd eat dogs as well. I want that on the record. Philip Green eats dogs.
Right, Josh, new research has asked gig-goers for their opinion on using mobile phones during concerts. 70% said they were annoyed by people constantly taking photos or videos of the show, and 69% said they would support more than minimal action to minimise the disruption. Should we ban mobile phones at gigs?
I think banning a phone at a concert's fine.
And the good news story of the week. One man's happy accident has brought new hope to the recovery of coral reefs around the world. Dr. David Vaughan had been trying to remove a coral from the bottom of a tank when it broke into a dozen pieces. To his shock, all the pieces regrew to the same size in just 3 short weeks, as opposed to the 3 years that it's taken to grow the original coral. This gives us hope of restoring the barrier reef, I think.
Woo.
Yay, good news. After a horrible episode of sadness, good news, the corals are coming back. Aww. Well, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Educating Josh. And thank you so much to our special guests, Benjamin Cook and Zara Barry. Ben, where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, in a ditch.
And Zara, where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram, at ZaraBarry1 is Twitter, and Zara.BarryComedy. Zara.Barry.Comedy is Instagram.
Nice.
I want more followers
than
Ralphie.
And when's your next show?
My next show is tonight.
Wow.
But after that, what have I got? I'm doing a Camden lunchtime show on Friday. Come to my Leicester Festival show, Things I Shouldn't Say, in February. Ooh. Look it up, Dave Leicester Comedy Festival.
Alright, don't forget to follow us on Instagram, Twitter or Facebook at Educating Josh. There'll be polls and content of each of today's stories, and we'd love to hear your thoughts. We also want you to send in more questions for next week's Quick Fire Round. Please go subscribe, and most importantly, leave a review over on Apple Podcasts or your podcast app of choice. This has been Educating Josh, a Studio 71 production. We'll see you next week for another episode of Educating Josh.
Goodbye.
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 Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye. Back under my desk.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.